High noon, as they say.
Who's they?
You know, they say high noon in Westerns.
Yeah.
And it's always dusty.
We're always watching Westerns. You know, JC wants me to take her to see It on Sunday.
I saw the preview to It. I give it a thumbs down. I thought it was stupid. Yeah, dumb.
All right. Well, she wants me to take her, and that's quite a request because I don't go to those movies, but it's R.
You're not going, are you?
Well, I don't. She doesn't.
If somebody's going to take her to It, it's going to be this guy right here because you get nightmares.
I know I do. I don't think I can do it. All right. So welcome, everybody. Tom told me that...
I told her not to have an intro because we have questions on the piece of paper I have in front of me.
All right.
And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people on the call. I already said hi to Sean. Hi, Kathy with the C. There's Jennifer from the East Coast. And there's Julianne Mullins. And there's Pog Bear. And there's Jen Rogers. And there's Allison.
All right.
So,
welcome, everybody.
Welcome. So I'm going to jump right in. Let me see if I can see. Yeah,
okay. Okay, I'm just going to get my water, so keep going. Start reading.
Are you going to listen?
But don't use names. Yes.
So here's a question. And we have really good questions this week.
Really
so
questions.
I don't know how many we're going to get through, but we're going to do our best. Recently, I had a friend visit, and our children, who are the same age, did not get along. My son, who usually gets along with most, was very frustrated to the point of tears. 3 times in one evening, which is rare. He cries maybe once every 6 months, if that. So I know the anger and frustration were high. Can you take out your email?
Yes, let me.
My friend's son has some behavioral issues that are part of his diagnosis. He's very intelligent and friendly, but at times challenges the rules. He is mainstream in school and at grade level. My son is a rule follower and knows the expectations we have at our home, not slamming doors, safety rules, etc. So my son would try to tell the other child not to do certain things, which result in the other child doing it more or shouting.
Mm-hmm.
I have 2 questions. How do I teach my son to accept and be kind to people with learning and behavioral differences? And 2, the self-reflection question, which is, I found myself a typically calm and easygoing person, very stressed, trying to please everyone. She goes on with some descriptions, and I will bring that up in a little bit. But what is your first impression?
Well,
I'm going to get my piece of paper.
I think that that anytime we have a play date, and regardless of the child's, you know, if a child has issues or maybe special needs or something, there's always this need to please. I'm actually very happy to be past the playdate stage. I got to be honest with you. There was the stage of where I'd have to show up and be part of the playdate.
Sweetie, you're making the moms who deal with this feel very bad.
No, I'm not going to because I'm going to offer some.
Good.
I'm not saying,
I was close.
So glad I'm not doing one of those. I'm
that's
doing
called not having a good bedside manner.
No. I'm just offering. It, when you acknowledge that it was challenging for you too,
yes,
then you realize you're not alone.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's a stage where you had to show up and be with your kid. And then there's a stage at drop off and always being worried about if your kid is going to go. It's a lot of work. You know, it's one of those things where if you were just to say to somebody, my kid had a play date today, they'd be like, oh, that sounds like an easy day. And they have no idea of the emotional implications of what that means if you're involved or if you're just getting the feedback about what happened.
And when they get to a certain age, it's called a hangout.
Yes.
My kids get very mad at me when I call it a play date when they're 11 years old.
Yeah, it's a hangout.
It's a hangout.
Even our 9-year-old says no.
Yes.
Okay, so with that said, this is a big self-awareness practice, okay? Because there's really nothing to do as far as changing the kids. Now, what I mean by that is her son is playing with somebody, regardless of their, you know, their needs, who is different than him. And he's having an experience of learning how to be with somebody who is different than him. Obviously, if there's something's going on where there's something like hitting or something inappropriate, of course, parents need to step in and kind of help and support and everything. What are you doing?
I just need to be able to see people.
You're right. It's hard to look at the screen when it's changing. Yeah. Obviously, a parent can step in. But really, I feel like the big discussions come after the play date. And it's not so much about telling your child to be different as it is about having a discussion about how they can manage being with somebody who doesn't play the exact same way and how to help your child manage their frustration with that rather than how to then become more like the other child. Because I think we will often say things just like, be nice, be kind, be nice, be kind. And her son may believe he's being kind by saying, don't do that, you know, because he's trying to adhere to the rules. And to him, that is kindness. And so these words of, we just need to be nice and we just need to be kind, has a lot to do with how us as the parent is feeling uncomfortable in that situation, how we just want everything to go smoothly. And instead of, you know, acknowledge that sometimes kids have those kind of challenges and that's real and it's okay. Like, we don't have to be, you know, puppet masters where we're like, this is going to go this way and then you're going to say this and then you're going to do this, because that's for our comfort. Do you have a question?
Actually, I don't have a question, but it's funny. She follows up with exactly what you're talking
about. Oh, really? Okay.
So she says, I also felt bad because I was trying to meet my guest's needs.
Yeah, yeah.
I was hurting my connection with my son in that moment. I guess my question is why I have that tendency of being so concerned with others and how to change that. My first priority is my connection with my husband and son and connection to my authentic self. So why does the people pleaser always come out and how can I change it? I also realize I need to practice more self-compassion regarding this situation. I was really upset with myself for not advocating for my child in that moment. He needed a tender place to fall. And on the first day of the visit, I was more concerned with having him please people and not too concerned with the injustice. We talked about it, and I apologize. Our connection
is restored.
Honestly, he probably hasn't thought of it since, but it has bothered me.
That's because it's a self-awareness thing.
Well, and she's coaching herself.
Correct.
Like, she knows this.
Correct.
So I would one thing is, by the way, I can't speak for everybody. I'm willing to bet that a lot of Team Zen people are people pleasers.
No.
I am also a people pleaser.
No.
And I will sometimes put the needs of, you know, it's that whole social awkwardness thing. You just want everybody to feel comfortable.
Right.
And because you love your kid, you know that you can make up for it at bedtime. So instead you push his needs aside in that moment to make these other people feel okay.
Yeah.
So she's, first of all, normalize what she's going through.
Okay.
We all do that.
Okay.
Second of all, she's coaching herself in the best way to have more trust. She apologized to her son.
I know.
Which is what a lot of parents, old school parents, chose not to do.
Right.
Something you and I advocate for. Mm-hmm. So those are my two cents.
That's great. And I think that the question that is the key to this is, you know, she knows what her priority is. My question is why I have the tendency of being so concerned with others and how to change that. You can't change it and you don't want to change it, because your a desire to be have connection to others and to make them feel good is a wonderful part of yourself. So you're not going to change it. Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get ready for the next thing.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So I won't
let me finish this thought and then, okay. It's like being watching TV with Todd where he's constantly changing the channel.
But I'm the producer.
I know you are, but
producing.
Right now there's a visual, we're not podcasting. There's a visual element. And when you're like messing with the screen, I can't see.
When can I type?
Let me finish this thought.
All right.
Okay. So this is what Todd and I do while we're podcasting too, but we're just making signs so you guys can't hear us doing it on the show.
That's
okay,
right.
So just to finish my thought, that part of you yourself is very valuable. So you're not going to disown it and you're not going to turn it off. What you're going to do is when it pops up, you're going to talk to it and say, I hear you. I'm so thankful I have you. But right now I need to focus on advocating. And you're not going to say it out loud, and you're not going to be like a crazy person talking to yourself. But we're these parts of ourselves that we say, how do I stop that? Or how do I get rid of it? Or how do I shut it down? You don't. You honor that you have it because it's what makes you an empathetic person. It's what makes you capable of seeing other people's experiences. But when you are in that situation and the people pleaser wants to take over, I always envision like in ourselves, there is like a line of people that live in us. And there's always someone front and center who's the leader, right? Because we have all these pieces of ourselves, all these ages that live inside of us, and there's always a leader. And the leader switches around, you know? Like, you may have a leader that's like it completely advocating, but then something happens and the people pleaser steps in front and says, I want to make this better. And you can listen to her or him and say, I understand, but you know what? I need to advocate right now. And the people pleaser can still stay there and be in second place, because then you're still coming from that place of warmth. You know, the people pleaser is a wonderfully warm, beautiful person, but that person can't always be in charge, or else we end up not advocating for ourselves and the people we that are closest to us, that we may feel, like Todd said, we can apologize to them later. We just want to make these strangers feel happy. That's often what the people pleaser wants to do. So I mean, I know I'm not simplifying the process, because it still necessitates sometimes some social awkwardness, where you have to be willing to sit in the discomfort, or to say, you know what, they seemed to, things were going well for a while, and now it seems like everybody's getting tired. So, you know, I think maybe we'll end, or we'll, you know, come back another time. Or you just say, you end up having to come in and kind of help your son, and help your son help his friend too, or help the friend understand your son.
What about maybe having a conversation with mom?
You can definitely do that too.
A polite one, a sure. Nice one, and not like, hey, your son's bothering my son. It's like,
well, and I don't even,
it depends how good of a friend this is.
I think what, that's a different question. I think what the question was how do I feel better about this situation, because my son is experiencing a kid who maybe doesn't make the same choices he does. But I don't, unless there's a certain degree of, like there's safety or anything like that, going to the mom, what would you say to the mom?
I would say, how do we make this work? You know, okay. The son's freaking out, crying 3 times in one play
yes.
date.
Yes.
Or you just, if the kid's not that important, like not a tight friend, you just, let's see, what does it say? Recently, I had a friend visit.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like, we don't know if it's a best friend
Correct.
Or an acquaintance. If
Correct.
It's an acquaintance, you know, I'm pretty strong advocate of, at least in the early years, because this kid's 5,
uh-huh.
of building a good
opening communication.
Well, yeah, that, and you can kind of like move in certain directions, like, well, play date over here, maybe no play date over there, that thing.
If there's part
that's
of that
tricky.
There it is tricky, and but in the moment, let's just talk about in the moment, you guys are like, okay, what do you do though when you're in the play date? Sometimes you can just come over and sit with your kid, maybe if the other boy is having a really hard time and crying, and saying,
oh, sorry. I'm trying to.
So Todd stopped messing with this computer, and now he's on his computer.
I'm trying to make it easier.
I know.
It's not working.
So you can talk with the kid, or talk with your kid, have your kid on your lap, and say, you know, let's support him, or ask the mom, say, what do you think we should do? You know, how do you think, if she's still there?
Right.
Because remember, we don't even know if the kid got dropped off
right.
or whatever. But I don't even think it's about the details. I know people want to say, but what do I say and what do I do? The thing is every situation is different. What happened is different. How the kid reacts is different. How your kid reacts. The key is, can you get into yourself? Can you get into a place where you hear the voice of, I need to people please, or I need everyone else to be happy, and to recognize, to make yourself and your son part of that mix. It's not about then having a situation where you and your son are the only ones who are important and you cut off your empathy for the other people. It's just where you say, you know, I'm going to support my son in this, and we're also going to see if together we can support this boy. You know, I think it's the why I brought up the whole thing of being in line and all these people in us is we have to acknowledge all those people and allow all those people inside of us to help, and not just be like, I'm going to be people pleaser. I'm going to just advocate for me. I'm going to, you know, we need to like bring our whole self to the process. And guess what? Not every time is it going to go perfectly. Every time, I just heard Rob Bell say this on his podcast yesterday. Every situation we have that maybe is uncomfortable, we gain a new wisdom. And then we bring all that wisdom together. And then as we move along, as our kid has a play date at 6, as our kid has a play date at 7, we accumulate more and more knowledge of how to interact and how to advocate, how to pull back, how to people please when maybe it necessitates. So I guess self-compassion, mama. It's okay. Like there was, you already kind of coached yourself through it. There's nothing you need to necessarily change. It's just when you come into the next situation, have a sense, you now have the wisdom of, I'm going to bring a little more advocacy, But I'm also going to keep that empathy intact so I can relate to that boy and that mom.
Well, and I would say awareness is half the battle. I mean, she already knows that she needs to have more self-compassion regarding the situation. So, you know, the fact that you know what you need to work on is half the battle. Now you just need to work on it, whether that, I don't know what that looks like, self-care, mindfulness, meditation, stuff like that.
Well, and the thing is we often say, I need to practice more self-compassion. I need to practice. We say it.
Yeah.
But there's no literal practice.
Right.
So I'm saying to her, in that situation next time, there is a, I'm going to take it, not I need to practice self-compassion. Those are just words. Is I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to pull on the wholeness of myself. I'm going to realize I'm going to get through this, that maybe there's some humor to be found. Self-compassion is recognizing this is not the end of the world, mm-hmm. that you're going to get through it, that it's okay, that you're watching your own movie, that not everybody is like focused on everything you're saying and doing. And, you know, just kind of recognizing that it's going to be okay.
Don't worry about a thing, because every little thing, it's going to be our, you're supposed to join
I know
in.
I was. I what know. Happened? I'm
Are
sorry.
Are you still mad about the computer?
No, I'm not mad. I wasn't mad.
Are
I just
you holding
was,
grudges?
No, I'm not holding
Are
grudges.
Are you a grudge holder?
I actually think it's funny that you were messing with this computer when I said, please don't. You started messing with that computer.
I was following directions. You
Todd,
said, don't
Todd
mess
needs
with this
fidget
computer.
Spinners. He needs to be like, ning, 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 ning.
This is what I wanted to type in. I wanted it because I like the back and forth as far as reading a question and having a question. So
right.
I was going to say, hey, everybody. If you have a question, raise your hand. But I was going to type it in so I don't interrupt you. But I interrupted you anyway.
Correct, because any kind of movement. But let's move on to the next one, because I know we got a bunch.
Does anybody want to raise their hand right now? Because if not, I have plenty of questions. So we're going to do a question right now, but raise your hand or put something in the chat box if you have something.
Yeah, you guys can just type to us that
right.
I have something to say. Or if you have, like, if we're reading a question, you're like, well, I have input on that.
Yeah.
Just tell us, because it doesn't just have to be us giving input.
And that's actually worked quite well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is a question. How can I handle and cope with my tendency towards comparison and my feelings of jealousy?
I'm now messing you up because I want to bring the computer closer.
I have many examples of this in my life, comparing my home to others, my kids, my abilities in certain areas, even my spouse. So it sounds like this person is a human being.
Correct.
Most recently, it's come up with my second grade daughter. I thought this was a hilarious example. She enjoys theater and performs in plays 2 or 3 times a year. Her first grade friend also performs in these plays with her. My daughter sings well and has gotten some of the bigger roles, but the last 2 times, her
no,
friend...
No, why are you laughing?
Because I think it's an honest, hilarious
so
example.
So you're not laughing at her.
I'm not laughing
you have to be
at
careful.
Her.
Yeah.
I think that this is a very vulnerable...
Very vulnerable,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so her first grade friend also performs in these plays with her. My daughter sings well and has gotten some of the bigger roles, but the last 2 times her friend has landed a bigger role and her friend really shines on stage. I have noticed that this makes me jealous. Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing to admit this out loud, but I know Zen Talks is not a place of judgment.
No, it's not.
No judgment.
Right, and that's why I know that I know why you're laughing, because you think it's like it opens your heart.
Yeah, right.
But with you know,
right, you need
you
to make sure. That's
yeah.
what your job is to make sure
yes.
I don't get in trouble. I'm working on self-compassion when I have these feelings rather than shame myself for feeling this way. Intellectually, I know that comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes.
But it's hard for me to put this into practice. I want nothing more than to sit back and let my daughter have her own experience, and I don't want to be attached to the outcome. For example, what parts she gets in the play or how well she performed. But this is hard for me. This is something I've struggled with all my life. My kids are young, and I know that this will continue to be a problem if I don't take a good hard look at it now.
Right. It's a great question.
Wonderful question. I honor her vulnerability and the whole like, hey, I compare my house to somebody else's house. I do the same stuff, and I think most other people do the same stuff. And if you don't, you probably have other places where you judge people. So the first thing I want to do is honor this listener, this questioner, and say thank you for your vulnerability. The second thing is she has this voice in her head. Some people call it the ego, whatever. And we all have that as well. And I feel like she's trying to not have this voice in her head, or she's trying
to... Do you see the similarities to the first question?
Yes, it's very similar to the first one. So my recommendation to this person would be to be aware that this is a very normal part of being a human being, is to discern, to compare, to contrast. And that is maybe our flight or fight amygdala part of our brain, We also have the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive functioning of our brain. And sometimes your reptilian brain thinks that you need to compare in order to survive. And it's not, and it's something that's there that's
supposed to help us.
Supposed to help you. Most of the time it gets us into trouble. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would say is that when these judgments do come up, which we all have, just recognize them, because the minute that you try to repress them and push them away, you give them more power. Just say, oh, there's my judgment. No kidding, you want your kid to be the best dancer. I want my daughter to be the best lacrosse player. Guess what? She's not. And your daughter's not going to be the best dancer. In the words of Mr. Miyagi, there's always someone better.
Correct.
So it's okay when these thoughts come into your brain and say, I want my kid to be the best at the expense of this first grader. That's called ego, which we all have. So just be cool with it. Love yourself when that happens, and that's it.
Yeah, I have two thoughts about that. I agree with what Todd said, and I think there's two things. Whenever there's like two layers to this, because there is the jealousy of another child doing better than my child or shining in a way that I wish my child did. But really, it's not so much about the child. It's about you, because there is a feeling of living through the child, which a lot of us tend to do, sometimes very unconsciously. We feel like the child is a part of us, like an arm, and if they shine, then we shine. And we can say, no, I just love my child and I want them to do the best. But see, I don't know if this little girl is jealous of the other kid. It's the parent. And again, as Todd said, we all do this, but we got to at least get clear about the fact of why we feel like we need, like why we have the feeling of, because this kid is shining on stage, it's somehow overshadowing my kid, or it makes me uncomfortable. Even if it's not overshadowing my kid, it makes me uncomfortable. I feel like I'm not happy for this other kid. I want my kid to have this. And again, this is like our inner child. And my suggestion is jealousy is always a really interesting indicator for us. When we are really jealous of somebody, or we're really envious of something, it tells us something about ourselves, what we need, what we feel like we don't have, what we feel like we are maybe repressing in ourselves. Like something that I can give two examples. One is, before I started really going out and teaching a lot, I went to a lot of conferences. This is like in my 20s and my early 30s. And I used to go to conferences and I would watch people on stage and I would be so annoyed at them. And I would be like, I just don't know if they're offering anything to people. And I was so annoyed at people on stage. And you want to know why? Because I knew I should be doing that. And I wasn't brave enough at the time to be offering myself and making myself vulnerable to be up there sharing of myself. So I would get annoyed at the people who were doing it. Okay. And
so the other people are simply a reflection back,
yes,
of what's going on,
yes,
inside your brain,
yes,
your heart, your soul.
And they're actually wonderful examples. Like, we think it's really about them or we're annoyed at them, but they're really reflecting back to us something really valuable and important. Is I realized, like, the more it kind of stacked up where I was annoyed at everybody who was writing a book or annoyed at everybody who was speaking, I kind of finally was like, now what is this trying to tell me? And it's that I'm not acknowledging myself and what I want to do. And I'm more annoyed at someone who's willing to do it than I am at myself. And it also happened, I used to be a dancer when I was younger.
What do you mean used to be?
Well, you know, now I'm like a
awesome
fun
dancer.
You know, now I just kind of do it in my own house. But I used to, like, you know, perform when I was in high school. And so when I started, when my girls were really, really little, and I would go watch them perform, and I would see these like high school girls or college girls perform, I was like, oh. Like, I was like, oh, I was so envious, wasn't I? I would like watch and I'd be like, oh, it's so great. It's so great. You know what I did? I took a tap dancing class.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm so envious of these other people that I'm like, it's because I want to dance. And, you know, there's a part of what they're doing that I feel like I'm not doing myself. Now, here's the interesting part. I took a tap dancing class for what, a year and a half?
You were
year?
Good.
I wasn't.
Yes.
But what it did is it kind of worked that muscle where then the next time I went back to my, and my girls don't do dance anymore. None of them do. But the next time I went back to a recital, I didn't envy anybody anymore. I mean, I enjoyed watching them, but I felt like I'd kind of listened to that and that I could kind of be like, that was, I did that in high school and I have my tap shoes in my room, but that's not what I want to do anymore.
Sweetie, are you telling this listener that she should go dance?
No, it doesn't always have to be so literal. It doesn't mean that she wants to be on stage in a first grade performance. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's something in us where we watch someone shine. Like she said, I watched this girl shine.
And she shines on stage.
And
it, says it, right
it
there.
Tells us that there's, what is it? Where do we want to shine? What do we want to do? And when I say shine, like I went and took a tap dancing class and it was a beginner's tap dancing class. And I call crap on that because everybody in there knew how to tap dance except me. And I was like, all you people should be in an advanced class because I'm learning these
steps. You were
steps.
The beginner.
I was like, what's happening? So I didn't go in there and shine, but I did work that muscle of I'm going to be seen. You know, I'm going to show up and I'm going to do these things I love. So this mom does not have to go out and perform or whatever, but it's the jealousy is indicating that there's somebody shining. And instead of being like, yeah, I can relate to that shininess because I know how that feels. It's I'm envious. And again, going back to Todd, that's 100% normal. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It just means take it as a challenge or an indicator rather than a self-depreciating behavior. Be like, what is that? Because it's not about the kid. It's not about the first grader. I mean, we can say it is, but they're just the mirror. They're just
reflecting
back.
They're the mirror, basically. And like I said, we all go through this, but the mirror is, in a weird way, it's like we're talking about second grade dance and first grade dance, but the mom is saying, I am not enough.
Or she's shining and
I am not enough.
And she'll say, no, I'm talking about my kid. But see, my kid is still an extension of me.
Yeah, the kid is where you kind of put your expectations because as parents, we're too lazy to kind of meet our own expectations.
Right.
So it's easier just to put all the expectations on our kids.
Or instead of saying we're too lazy, sometimes we think that's the only option because we've been told as parents we need to put all of our energy into our kids. So then we try and shine through them rather than recognize they actually will do better if we find our own ways of shining. And remember, shining doesn't mean you're going to be first and it doesn't mean you're going to be the best. You may be in the back row of the tap dancing class, not keeping up, but at least you're there.
Were you in the back row?
I was.
But usually when you're in class, you sit at the front row by the teacher.
I know, but if you're not good, you have to watch other people's feet.
Oh.
And so do you remember I would come home and do the YouTube video of the tap dancing? I got better, but
you tap dance for us next week?
Maybe. That's not the tap dancing. Or when I was a kid, I tap danced in like fourth grade, but in high school I did like dance, like palms, you know? So it wasn't the same thing.
Can you tell me that one more time?
But
that was good.
I hope that kind of just gives, you know, not just for her, but for all of us. And I still get jealous and I still get envious and it doesn't mean I always go take a class. It means what is it that I'm seeing that maybe I feel like I could pull out of myself?
Are you jealous of how I dance?
Not often. But sometimes.
Because I'm awesome?
What Todd does that's fun is...
Here's the thing about dancing. You just got to be confident.
Yes.
Even if you suck, just be confident dancing.
Yes.
And it comes off like you know what you're doing.
Right.
That's my trick.
Right. It's every wedding. That's his trick.
Just own it.
It's his trick.
If you suck, own your suckiness.
Yes. But he's fun. So people like to dance with him and stuff. So he's fun. We have some moves. We learned how to dance for our wedding. It was pretty good.
We our song was Billy Joel,
Just the Way You Are.
What a surprise.
Shocking.
I love that song. And
Shocking.
Our dance instructor's lady's name was?
Emily.
Where is Emily?
Emilee. And Todd didn't like that. That bugged you. Do you remember? You're like, just spell
it. Come on.
Just do it the other way.
That's my judgment. That's my inner voice.
Todd's like, be normal. Be like me. Be average. Yeah, not that you're average.
Whoa.
We're all average. I'm joking.
I'm so glad that Kelly just wrote in the chat. I'm going to unmute Kelly because she has an amazing question, or at least I think so. So, Kelly, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had written this question on the Facebook page, too. It's about accepting my parents as they are. I've been struggling with it, not just with this latest incident, but for a little while with both of my parents, but especially with my dad. I'm trying to buy a house, as I had mentioned, and I, you know, thought dads are the ones that you send like the inspection report to and get their input. And I'll add, I'm a single mom, just me and my daughter, so no one else in our immediate family that I can ask for help. And so I've kind of had my dad on default when I need like electrical help or car help or all of those things. And like, we had a gas shortage in Texas and I was having trouble finding gas, and I called him because I wanted him to be like, it's okay, you know, don't worry. And, you know, he just escalates it. It makes it worse. And I realized I need to stop asking him for that support, but I'm still struggling with kind of what I expect from my dad. And the same is true of my mom as well.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, it's such a good question. And I loved that question because I could relate to it very much. And you know what, I'm going to put you on mute, but take you off in a second. I could relate to that because it, and not just with my parents, but with other people where you go to them. What's the saying that we always talk about this with your sister, where you go to the store for something. The thing that I wrote back to Kelly is like going to a cow for eggs or going to a chicken for milk. And we keep thinking that they're going to give us the thing that we want. And with that said, it doesn't mean that the cow and the chicken aren't wonderful and don't have something to offer. Because this is the thing. I think when it comes to our parents or the people who, you know, we love most, we do want their approval and we just feel better. Like you said, with the gas, you're just, you know, when you're like, you want to go to them and have them tell you it's okay, here's the plan. So when they actually respond as a typical adult would, which is, this could be bad. What's going on? It's even worse. It's like double whammy because you're going to them for the consoling. And not only are you not getting the consoling, but you're getting a little, what would sometimes feel like not shame, but like guilt or like, oh my gosh, this is worse than I thought. So the first thing I want to start with is why they do that. I don't know your parents and I'm not going to say, oh, you know, this is exactly why, but it's somewhere in the realm of that's the way they're trying to love you because they're concerned. So when you bring them something, if their friend said to them, just an average friend or a neighbor said, I'm worried about gas, they may say like, oh, don't worry about it. But with you, Kelly, when you call them about gas or about the house, they're invested. They care so much.
They don't want to see their baby girl make a big mistake. Now, here's the thing, because so I read Kelly's question a few times. She said she got the inspection report. He told me the house showed all signs of shoddy workmanship, and it's the worst inspection report he's ever seen. Now, I can just picture Kelly listening to her dad say that, mm-hmm. and completely, like, she's all excited,
deflated,
like, ooh. All the air went out.
Totally,
the balloon.
I can see it too.
And it's tricky because it's possible that her dad is protecting her from making a big mistake, or it's possible the house is fine and her dad is just being a pain in the butt,
or not a pain in the butt, but his standards are different, mm-hmm. right?
So, I almost feel like in that case, I'd like if I'm your dad. And you asked me what I thought, I would tell you what I thought. And if I thought the inspection sucked, and then you got mad at me for responding, I'd be like, what do you want from me?
Right.
So I almost feel like you have to kind of say, Dad, I'm buying this house.
Right.
I want to hear good news. If you have bad news, or just don't show them the inspection report. So I feel like it's one or the other, no?
Well, and I want to share a story with you, Kelly, that it reminded me of. It actually isn't my story. It's my sister's story. My aunt's on the call, so she might remember this. But when my sister bought her first house in Elmhurst, which is where we live now, they moved away, but they bought an older house. And I remember my sister brought the inspection to my dad. And my dad did not like that inspection. And he was like, same, similar thing, like the, you know, the piping is bad. You know, there was all these things that my dad, because he was really good with this kind of stuff. He's like, this is not going to work. And my sister is a little more assertive. She can like, you know, and she basically went to him and said, Dad, listen, I believe you that all these things are here, but we're buying this house.
We're buying this house.
So do you think just along the way I could come to you for advice if something doesn't work? And, you know, kind of made my dad laugh.
So if I was your dad or Kelly's dad, I'd say, okay, you're buying this house, but you can use this as negotiation leverage. So maybe that's one way that like the dad can frame it in that situation, like totally supporting you, but you should ask for these things because the reality of the situation is it needs new pipes and it's going to cost you 10 grand to fix.
And I think what unfortunately happens to us, you know, our, you know, as daughters and sons, is we assume that it's a scolding, that we're doing something wrong, or that we didn't listen, or that we are not taking the lessons from our parents that they tried to give us, or that we're not being approved of. There's all sorts of deep stuff about that. And so when you're feeling that, I want you to know that everybody on this call, including us, feel that sometimes when, you know, when it comes to our parents or authority figures, where you're like, I just want you to tell me I'm okay, you know? And they're not trying to say we're not. They are just trying to love us sometimes in a more practical way. And, but one of the things I wrote to you, and then we'll let you talk for a second, is that sometimes before we bring the report, and this is kind of maybe an evolving of your relationship with your dad, because maybe you haven't done this before, but before you give him the report, you can use humor and you can say, I have a feeling you're going to have feedback about this, but what I'm really looking for, Dad, is that you'll be in it with me. Because I really like this house and I'm feeling good about it. And I know you're going to have feedback, but what I'm really looking for is support. Because then it might make him laugh and he might still say, oh, shoddy workmanship, but he'll know what you're going for. Because a lot of times, like Todd said, when we just, this, Todd does this, I'll bring him something I've worked so hard on and he'll say, no, this doesn't look good. And I'll go, oh, I've been working on it.
What about when your first book came out, a friend of yours read it and then didn't tell you how great it was, but instead that there was a typo on page 34.
I know.
Do you remember who that was?
Do you know the typo's still there? You guys, I haven't changed it. It's from 2004 that book came out.
And they think,
I like the typo.
They think less of you because you haven't changed
it. I know. Well, I kept it there because she told me it was there. There's a little bit of like...
A little bit of... I just want to flip the bird to the screen.
No.
A little bit of that.
I was like, you know what? I'm not perfect. And I edited that thing myself. Okay, so Kelly, go ahead.
Did you write that in the chat box, Kelly?
No.
Oh, somebody okay. else did. So,
doesn't matter who it is. Just read it.
It says, my whole life, I've tried to talk to my dad when I'm anxious, sad, etc., hoping he will help me through it. I am always met with anger from him. Mm. It took me almost 35 years to realize he's angry because he loves me so much, and he gets angry to hear that I am upset. Who wrote that?
That's excellent.
I don't know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Julianne Mullins. I'm going to mute Kelly for a second and we're going to move over. Julianne, tell me a little bit more about that.
Hi. Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack anything.
No, we love it.
Well, I think I first realized it with my six-year-old daughter because when she is upset about something, I start feeling like super anxious and angry. And it kind of dawned on me one day, like because I was feeling that, and you know, have enough self-awareness, thanks to you guys, that I'm like, okay, you know, why am I like this? That I just realized that that was where my dad has been coming, you know, from all these years. And I just have realized, you know, I cannot come to him with these things because it just makes him too upset.
Yes. Julianne, I have a great, and Kelly, for that matter, you can put it on mute. One of Todd and my favorite movies is Parenthood, the old Parenthood, not the TV show, but the old Parenthood.
But the TV show is awesome.
The TV show is awesome too. But there's this great scene when Steve Martin is talking to his dad, who's Jason Robards, and they kind of have a contentious relationship because Jason Robards is often very critical of him. And Jason Robards starts telling him a story about how when they were really little, they thought, Steve Martin's character, when he was a little boy, they thought he had polio. And Jason Robards said to him, I was so angry at you for that.
Yeah.
Because what that made him do was feel.
And us guys, we don't like to feel.
And, you know, so, you know, Steve Martin's looking at him like, you were angry at me that I might have polio? And he's like, yes, because that made him
uncomfortable.
Hurt because he loved. Sometimes how much we hurt and how angry we get. And again, you got to be careful with this, but I know Team Zen gets this, can be an indication of how much we feel for that person. Now we can't take that over the top with the, you know, well, I'm going to hurt you because I love you stuff.
Right.
What I'm saying is the feelings that come up is a lot of times. So, you know.
And Kathy had something to share. Kathy, would you mind if I unmuted you and you said it? All right, go ahead.
Hey, no, it's just, I've noticed that with myself as well, with my kids, that I, as a mom, I just automatically always went to that place of, well, how can I fix this? How can we fix this? And through, like, you guys and other self-awareness, is just being able to be there for the person and be with them through it and not necessarily try to fix it, because maybe they don't need the fixing anyway, but I automatically with my kids always jump to, okay, well, so what can you do to do that? Instead of letting them kind of process it through on their own and maybe come up with it or actually have the chance to ask for help. Maybe they didn't want the help in the first place. So I'm trying to watch that as well. And maybe that's where her dad feels she's his little girl, you know, and it's that, how can you make everything perfect? And yeah, you tend to have that weird reaction of getting angry at the other person and kind of tearing them down when you really do actually love them and want to help them.
Exactly.
I love it. And I'm going to move to Jennifer, who had had something. But before I do that, I think it's interesting. This is kind of what I was always hoping with Zen Talk, is that we all kind of like try to help each other. Mm-hmm. And the one, this is by far the most feedback we've gotten on a question. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that it has to do with our parents.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh my goodness. Always good stuff.
A lot of baggage. Jennifer, was it you who typed something in?
Yeah. So I guess I really, this question really spoke to my heart, Kelly, because I'm not a single parent, but my dad died when I was young and I am not in contact with my mom anymore. So I realized after having my own kids that we never really stop needing our parents, no matter how old we are. And there's that part of me that, and it kind of goes back to the first question, I feel a jealousy toward some of my friends who have really supportive parents, and I see how much it helps them in their life. And I have this tremendous sadness that I don't have that. And so I just want to say, first of all, you know, I understand how you're feeling a lot, and to not look at it from the perspective of just because you're a single mom. I think you would probably feel that way even if you weren't. But I do struggle, and I mean, I've been in therapy for a long time, but I do struggle filling that void, and I'm really not sure, you know, I have in-laws and they're great in many ways, but I don't connect with them emotionally. So I always feel like I'm yearning for this thing that I can't get. Even if I put myself out there to them, you know, and I'll say something to my mother-in-law, like, mom, you know, I'm really struggling with this. And she'll say, oh, well, you shouldn't feel that way. You know, and it's just, I feel like I'm always laying myself bare and I'm not getting back what I want from that parental support. So I don't know how to fill that void. And maybe that's kind of a depressing question because I don't know that anyone can really answer it. But I really struggle with that a lot. So I want to say thank you for this discussion because it makes me feel better to know that everybody else is kind of struggling with it too.
Awesome.
Something that's interesting, Jen, is that I think that even I think we kind of all do that feeling that you're having where I'm laying myself bare and I'm looking for some kind of maternal or paternal support and I'm not feeling I'm getting it. And the interesting thing or the irony is actually that's exactly what Kelly's doing with her father who is living, and she's still not getting exactly what she needs. And we sometimes do that with our spouse, like, you're my spouse and I want this kind of support from you and I'm not getting it, is sometimes there's an idealized idea of what a parent will offer us and it's not reality. And that doesn't mean that the parent isn't doing their job. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with the parent or they're failing us. It means we all have, it's kind of like we have this thing in our head of, I'm going to open my heart and lay myself bare and I already know what I need back. But the person who's receiving it may not know, like Kelly's dad. He doesn't really know. She's going, what she's really saying is, Dad, help me. Dad, see me. Tell me I'm going to be okay. And he's coming back with more problems, not because he doesn't love her, but because that's his modus operandi. So, you know, to you, Jen, like you, the first thing is to, and I hope this makes you feel better, is that, you know, a lot of us who, you know, have parent or parents, sometimes we go to them, even though they're here still on earth, and they still don't give us back, even if they're our biological, you know, parent. And that sometimes those are moments where we have that connection are in really interesting circumstances with people we would never assume. You know what I mean? Like it could be an interaction with a stranger or a moment with our child or a friendship, and that I think we, again, going back to, we've idealized how the parent relationship is supposed to be. And that's often sometimes why we put so much pressure on ourselves as parents, because we try and be all things to our kids. Like, I'm going to be totally open, but I'm going to have boundaries, and I'm going to be their best friend, but I'm going to have structure, and I'm going to, like, we feel like we need to be all these things because we were looking for that from one person or from two people. And the truth is that our children will come to us, but I hope they have plenty of other people to come to besides us. Like, we try and make their world bigger. And so in answer to you, Jen, there is no like simple answer, but keep doing what you're doing with opening your heart to people. And sometimes it hurts because they don't give you back, you know, even especially with an in-law where you're like, oh, I just want you to be more like a parent figure to me. But not everybody has that, you know, they in that moment. But there are times like I'll speak of Todd's sister because I'm really close to her. There may be times that I go to her with something where I kind of want to have a certain interaction with her and it doesn't happen. But then another time I do it again. I keep doing this because I'm saying I'm opening my heart, being vulnerable, and I do get something back. Do you see what I mean? So it's not the person. It's the different interactions and the willingness. You know, this is the whole thing about vulnerability, the willingness to keep doing it.
Somebody's got to make a move.
Exactly.
Speaking of moves, I'm going to move over to my friend Sean.
Okay.
Sean, what did you say?
So, I mean, this is very timely. So I had a discussion with my daughter the other day, and she was talking about anxiety and a fearful situation. And I want to go into the details with her, and she really doesn't want to go in the details. So the next day I sent her a note and said, you know, I know how you're feeling and I'm here to help. And sometimes when she goes into the details, I want to help, and she doesn't want to hear what I have to say. Really? She doesn't want that much help. So it's interesting to hear everybody talk about it because I'm trying to, trying to feel my way through.
Will she talk about it? I mean, let's just say that you're going to put on your listening hat and not offer any advice. And I'm not even saying that you're trying to fix her problem, but will she at least open up and talk to you about it, or she doesn't even want to do that?
I mean, she'll give some details about the situation that she's uncomfortable with. I think it's when I try to go a couple levels deeper that she starts to shut down. So
one thought for you, Sean, or for any of us in the parent role or understanding our parents better, is a lot of times where healing comes from, and I'll give you an example. The person who wrote the first email that we talked about, she wrote it. Todd wrote back to her. This was really vulnerable. And she wrote, I can't tell you how healing it is just to write this. Now, the reason I'm sharing that with you is that when your daughter comes to you and wants to share something, it's not always about the response, and it's not always about needing something. It's having you witness something that she's challenged by and her being able to have a safe space where she can say it. And is there enough space where it can just reside in there without being fixed? And sometimes it's like, but what if, you know, Todd will say, I know what he would say, but there are times you do want me to fix it. Well, there are times I do need help, but you can already feel, Sean, you tried to go a step deeper and she didn't want you to. So that can be your thought of, you know what, she may just want me to witness this. And to just say, I totally hear you, or I've had an experience similar, or, you know, what do you think will happen next? Or once you get through this, come back and tell me what happened. I'm curious. Yeah. Like having a more curious.
And what I think is a really good idea, and it doesn't sound like you got maybe as far as you wanted to, but the fact that you tried to have a conversation with her, it didn't go well, and then you followed up with a note.
I think that's huge.
Different forms of communication. Kathy has this great thing where the girls have a notebook next to their bed. Mm-hmm. And if something is too intense, like let's say, I don't know, something like our 14-year-old wanted to kiss a boy, like I'm just making that up. That's a pretty intense thing to tell your mom. So there has been occasions where our daughters have written in the notebook, and I don't know if they give you the notebook.
They just lay it on my bed.
They just lay it on the bed. And because it's just too intense. So the fact that, Sean, you're trying to use different forms of communication, you know, you're trying to troubleshoot this in the way that your brain's structured. Like, well, if this didn't work, let me try that. I would just say, keep trying different things. And sometimes you're going to go too far and you're going to screw up. And when you do, you apologize. Other times you might have a miniature success and you kind of build on that. And then just kind of keep doing different stuff.
And also recognizing what success means, because what Todd's saying is keep going till you get it. Or, and you didn't say this, Todd, but
don't put words in my mouth.
I'm totally putting words in your mouth. But if Todd meant keep going till you get the information, till you help her. That may not be what she needs. She may just been needing to say something in a safe place with someone who unconditionally loves her so she could get it out of her body, and that's it.
And as a dad, that's really hard, because when your 21-year-old daughter or your 2-year-old daughter is in pain, you want to fix it. And that's really hard to not do that. So what your daughter needs, what our wives need, is they need presence, which means that you don't – I know I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I'm like, well, change your strategy. If you're busy changing your strategy, you're not paying attention to what's going on in this moment.
That's what I was trying to say.
So it's a muscle you have to build over time, but at least now I know what my muscle is that I need to build, and it's presence.
And that every time is different because, and again, sometimes what I say about this show that we do, or when Todd and I are doing a presentation, is I hope you leave more confused when you get off this call. And I know it's like, well, why is that good? But what that does is it breaks apart all these boxes that you have in your head of this is how I do it. And you need to break them apart so you can be present. Because there are times, Sean, when, and I'll just use myself instead of one of our kids, when I've come home and I've needed to say something and I've said it, and Todd just sits there and looks at me and he's like, I'm offering presents. And what I was really looking for was what Kelly was looking for from her dad, which is tell me it's going to be okay. Sitting there staring at me is not helpful.
Didn't know that.
And so then you guys will say, well, then which is it? It depends.
It's an origami
puzzle.
And
this is called life. And it's messy. And there's no straight up answers. And that you got to try a bunch of different things. And sometimes you get it. Like on the first try and you're like, oh my gosh, I totally nailed that. And then but the willingness to say to your daughter or to your dad or me to Todd, this didn't work. What I was looking for didn't work. That's vulnerability. You know what I mean? What I was looking for, I didn't get. I need more help. And again, your daughter may not do that with you, Sean, but you may say, you know what? When you came to me, I don't think I gave you what you were looking for. And so can I just offer you support and tell you that when, you know, that I'm here?
Well, we talk about this a lot. Love language. Figure out, you probably already know what her love language is. And don't even address the anxiety, because even, okay, here comes dad wanting to heal my anxiety. Don't even bring it up, but just make some other deposit into her emotional bank account through the love language that she speaks in. So I have a good new tagline for ZenTalk.
Be confused.
It confuses me.
Well, I see a huge thread between all these questions, but I'll make the leap between like Sean and Kelly's. Kelly is just going to her dad saying, tell me I'm okay and that there's nothing wrong with me and that my choices are good. And your daughter, Sean, is just coming to you saying, I have this issue. It makes me uncomfortable, but I'm still normal and okay, right? And, you know, Jen, with her thing about wanting a parental figure, she wants to go to somebody who understands her and hears her and says, I'm normal and I'm okay and you love me unconditionally, right? And, you know, same thing with Julianne with her dad. Like, it's all the same thing. Do you see how, you know, sometimes we deal with these surface issues, but it's all this core stuff. And if we like deal with the core stuff, all the answers are the same. Like that's one thing I love about teaching all of this or talking about this with kids to adults to whatever, is that the answers are always the same. And the answers are universal principles of, you know, self-awareness, compassion, connection, and mindfulness. But every example is different. But the core issues are, you know, like, isn't that interesting? Do you find that interesting? That
yes.
All these questions are like threaded together?
Well,
I love it when that happens.
We've done almost 400 podcasts where we basically talk about the same thing every single time. I do want to say one thing. We've done, I think, is this our 14th or 13th?
Yeah, this is number 14.
So we've done 14 of these. Honestly, I didn't even know this before I woke up today, but the way that this one went is the closest that this is the way I want it to be, because I kind of feel like we're all sitting at a big round table, and I know you and I do most of the talking, but the fact that it's just a discussion as opposed to one-sided, here's a question, here's an answer. So I'm just saying that to encourage future Zen Talks, like if you have something to add or something that you're working on based off of somebody else's question, like this for me personally was the most fulfilling Zen Talk we've had, just because it's a dialogue. Kathy and I, as you all know, do our podcast, And we get all these requests for interviews and all that. And
people who want to be interviewed on the show.
And most of the time we say no, just because we don't, because we're selfish and we like mic time. But even if it's somebody that we really love, we need to get them in the room, because there's an intimacy that happens when you are in the room with somebody. Mm-hmm. So this is the closest thing that I've seen to that. So I just hope we can kind of perpetuate that.
Well, and I will say, if we don't on the next one, it's okay.
Right. I'll say it's a miserable failure.
I am going to, what Todd said is true. There's an isness to it. He really likes it when everyone talks. And I think it's wonderful too. But if number 15 is about people listening, that's no problem. There, I don't have any, I'm not like, it has to be this way or it's not working. I don't believe in that at all. I think that however you guys want to do it, Todd just likes to hear from you because he likes to have,
it's just kind of how I'm built.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And I'm just like, I'm breaking down the box of how it needs to be.
And as we sign off, Kelly just said, that's the same for the Facebook page. I love the Todd and Kathy answer, but love the answers from others too. So it's just, maybe today was just about us encouraging to, because really we're trying to build a community, a virtual community that we couldn't do 5 years ago because the technology wasn't as good, and it'll be better soon. We're still working some tweaks out, but this is the closest thing. So
if, for example, if somebody writes something on the Facebook page and Todd and I haven't been there yet, because there are days that we're not home, so we can't, type, you don't have to wait for us to respond. We'll come in later, but if you're like, oh, I have experience with that, don't think you're like taking over or something. What's the word where there's a flat hierarchy here, in this group. There's no like, oh, wait for Kathy to say something or Todd to say something. No, jump in. Offer whatever you want, and then we'll jump in when we get there too. And if you don't get your question answered, email us or type it again, or tag my name so I know, because sometimes I miss it, because if I haven't been on the computer for a day, it gets way too far.
Plus,
down.
Also, it helps, remember in war games, you get DEFCON 1, DEFCON 2, DEFCON 3, and DEFCON 4. Mm-hmm. DEFCON 4 is when there's a war, and DEFCON 1 means everything's at peace. If you guys have a question that really you're struggling with and you need something,
urgency.
So there's a sense of urgency, just let us know. And if there's one like, hey, I wouldn't mind if you talked about that, because that will kind of help us prioritize certain things. So anyways, we're 56 minutes in. See you later,
Thank
alligator.
Thank you.
Be
we
good.
Appreciate all your good questions and feedback.
Yeah.
Love all of you. Bye.
Adios.